Okay, I'd like to call the meeting to order. We do have a quorum here and have a couple more that are coming. I think we wait for introductions until we have everyone here. But we are welcome back to all those who are coming back, and welcome too to the ones who are new on the committee. And we do have a number of new faces this year, so glad to have you here. What we're going to be doing to begin with is really an overview, and it's especially beneficial to the new members, but I think to all of us, to have an overview of the agencies that we have some jurisdiction over. Today we are going to be having an overview from the Department of Natural Resources. And next Tuesday we're going to be having an overview from Bowser, the Board of Water and Soil Resources, and also from the PCA, Pollution Control Agency. The following a week from today, we're going to be having a tour of the facilities of those agencies. So hopefully get a good background of information before we move on with legislation, and hope you find today's overview helpful. As far as the testimony, it's going to be given by Mr. Bob Meyer, the Assistant Commissioner of the DNR, during the presentation, you can ask questions if you wish. If they're more of a nature of clarification, I guess I'd prefer that any other questions maybe wait until the end if you can write them down as we're going along, so that you'll have ample time to get through the testimony and the overview first. But any questions of clarification, certainly feel free to ask along the way. And with that, Mr. Meyer, if you'd like to step forward, that'd be great. State your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. For the record, my name is Bob Meyer, Assistant Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. For those of you who don't know me, we'll be spending a lot of quality time in this room together, probably with me and a bunch of other DNR staff and professionals presenting policy information, trying to answer your questions to the best of our ability, and see where we go from there. My main role during session is to be the interface between the legislative branch and the DNR. So for those members, I'll be coming around to meet you shortly and give you my contact information. Actually, I can give you my direct phone number right now if you need it. It's 651-259-5024. And then it's 259-5024. And my email address is bob.meier, M-E-I-E-R, at dnr.state.mn.us. So with that, Mr. Chair has asked us to present an overview of the organization. It is a rather complex organization, roughly 3,000 employees in various offices throughout the state. We have a number of office facilities, which I'll get into. Eight different divisions, actually seven now. Just recently we've combined Parks and Recreation Division and the Trails and Waterways Division to help us further focus and align our outdoor recreation mission and goals. As we're facing a trend of decreasing recreational participation, we feel that doubling those efforts together to help create gateways of people, using the parks as a gateway to get people into the system, realize what outdoor opportunities there are, trails, hiking, biking, snowmobiling, other motorized and non-motorized uses within the parks and trail system and in the state forest system, and tying those into camping, fishing, bird watching, berry picking, whatever they want to do. It's a natural thing, since that's where they're coming to. We have a place where they can sleep and educate people and buildings and shelters and things like that. So you'll hear more about the gateway concept as we move forward as well. The presentation I have before you today is kind of broken up into two different parts. One is just talking about the organization itself, a little bit about our mission, our organizational structures I talked about, and some of the major issues and drivers of change that we're facing, not only now, but we have been facing for the past couple of years. And then after that, I'm going to get into the programs and delivery of conservation results by division, talk about program core functions, a little bit about budget stuff, but not too much, and then strategic priorities that we're looking to work on now and into the future. The DNR mission is really a conservation mission focused around integrated resource management, and this graph here, we feel, does a good job outlining that. The mission has a three-part mission. One is providing outdoor recreational opportunities of all types. I should start to say, first, The first and foremost is provide natural resource protection for the state's resources and areas, ecological areas throughout the state. But in doing so, we must also provide outdoor recreational opportunities and also make sure that commercial opportunities or economic development through our natural resources are done in a sustainable manner. Really, where we focus or try to focus on is in the center there of the three circles where it says DNR. This really is integrated resource management at its best, where we're providing economic development, outdoor recreation, and natural resource protection. A good example of this, and I'll get into it a little bit later when we talk about forestry, is our Forests for the Future program, or Minnesota Forest Legacy program, that we've worked with the legislature to establish and achieve bonding dollars for. To date, we've protected over 60,000 acres of forest land throughout the state, and those acres are kept as working forests, providing recreational opportunities, snowmobile trails, ATV trails, hiking and biking trails are open to hunting, and also we're protecting them from division or from development of individual small acres, 40s, 20s, 80s, 160s, keeping it as a contiguous working forest, which is really what we need for habitat and to maintain a logging infrastructure out there. The driving trends, as I spoke of, really, as it relates to our mission, are threefold, and there's actually more, but we kind of categorize them in these three basic categories. The first one, I talked a little bit about recreational participation changes, the changes we see in not only hunting and fishing, but camping, people just getting outside, and those challenges that we see really is affecting all aspects of what we do as a department, but we need to make sure that people, and especially children of the state, have the opportunity to get outside, to experience camping, to experience hiking or looking at a trail, fishing, skipping stones, whatever you have. I know as I look where I grew up, just here in the east side of St. Paul, I had the opportunity back then to spend time in outdoor recreational corridors doing just that. And it really did have a big influence on my life. Landscape changes, as we see, and we'll talk about further, the development pressures that we see not only in the metropolitan area but in outstate Minnesota are driving our landscape changes beyond belief. I'm sure you're aware of the numbers that people are throwing around, but within the next 25 years or so, the state of Minnesota will have a million new people approximately in the state. And those people aren't going to live in existing houses. They're going to live in new houses. They're going to have an impact somewhere. There will be development, which we need to have development. We are not against development. We want to talk about sustainable development and economic uses in ways that make sense. And a big one that I know has been discussed already here in the legislature is energy and climate change. You'll probably hear some of the MCAG or Minnesota Climate Change Advisory Group reports. I'm sure there'll be a bill or two floating around about that. One of the big recommendations related to natural resources was forestry or reforestation, planting thousands of trees to make sure that the carbon sequestration is taking place, but doing so to provide riparian buffers to protect that land from erosion, and also provide that energy, biomass, paper, pulp, whatever it is. And climate change also impacts the way we are as a state and the way we will look. People say, if you want to think about what Minnesota will be like in the next 25, 30 years, think about 400 miles south, or Kansas City is kind of what some people use as an example. That's the climate that we possibly will have in the next 25 years or so because of climate change. So as we look at things like forest management, reforestation, acquisition of lands, management of lands, we're trying to make sure that we think of that and we're doing that in a way that deals with that kind of mindset. What is this going to be like? What will these lands be like? Wetland restoration, what will be the pressures on wetland 25, 50 years from now because of climate change? What the trees we're planting and growing today in our forest nurseries is the private that we buy from the private industry. We need to make sure that they're going to be resilient to the climate changes, moisture and temperature changes that are out there. So we feel that the department as a whole is above the curve, as other state department and natural resources agencies are, and taking an active leadership role in how we're going to be doing this for the state of Minnesota in the years to come. So those are things you'll be hearing and you'll see as we go through the session, not only this year, but in years to come. just a little bit on partnerships as it relates to the DNR, and we work directly with citizens, stakeholder groups, and all levels of government in setting priorities, providing technical expertise, and managing natural resources. Without this partnership, we wouldn't be able to succeed. There's a lot of counties, and some of you may represent those counties, that have no net gain policies in place. The county boards have passed resolutions saying the state of Minnesota should not be buying any more land within our county unless they sell some. Well, working together with those local units of government, coming up with what we focus on in the county level as strategic land asset management, we're slowly able to chisel away at that block. Actually, just this week, Lake of the Woods County has given us authorization to buy a 640-acre wildlife management area parcel that they did not want us to do in the past. So because of our building that relationship, nurturing that relationship with the county, we're now able to succeed and move forward with some land conservation values that we want to proceed with. But part of that is working with the county, say, count, what do they own? Land ownership is a checkerboard pattern across the state. And this is any good landowner would want to do. They want to consolidate their land holdings. So we're working with the counties, trying to figure out what should be consolidated, what should be county-owned, what should be state-owned, what maybe is in the best interest of the state to sell for many different reasons, to provide our trust, school trust fund fiduciary responsibilities, because it doesn't make sense to be part of the DNR system or the state system anymore. And it'd be better off served as ownership under a different local unit of government. Now, that doesn't mean it won't be green space or open space or have conservation value. It just means that somebody else will have ownership of that many times. And secondly, on this point, it's just balancing the multiple interests. And I kind of spoke about that with the three circles a little bit. But working together to address the competing interests of all aspects or all interest stakeholders out there, in ways to ensure sustainable use of natural resources while protecting the environment. This is a difficult task for us to do, but it's one that we must take on, take the bull by the horns, and continue working at this level. Otherwise, the department will never be able to succeed. And, you know, as we talk about economic growth and sustainable development, without managing these multiple interests, we just won't be able to be a successful entity, or the state will not be able to succeed without doing this. Much like you guys have to do here is balance all these multiple interests to come up with workable solutions. We're in the business of doing that too on the conservation and protection side of things. Talking about organization a little bit further, we are organized regionally. We have four regional offices. Northwest, or what is referred to as Region 1, is located in the Bemidji area. Northeast in Grand Rapids, Region 2. Our central region is located in St. Paul here, down by Warner Road. And you can see it follows down along the Mississippi River corridor. That was a regional alignment we undertook about 2 years ago just to deal with the issues related to the Mississippi River and keep them all in one division, or in one region, I should say. And then the New Ulm, the southern region office is located in New Ulm. We have four regional directors. The regional directors from your region, if they have not contacted you or met with you, they will be doing so shortly, just to kind of have an introductory meeting and bring you up to speed on issues within your region. As an organization focusing on divisions and bureaus, the department's organized through the commissioner's office. Commissioner Mark Holston is our commissioner. Deputy commissioner is Lori Martinson. Myself, I'm the Assistant Commissioner for Policy and Government Relations, and I do oversee and supervise our four regional directors, our regional management teams, and also our tribal liaison, tribal relations activities. And then Assistant Commissioner of Operations is Larry Kramka, who focuses on the operational side of the organization. We are a field organization. As we change something on the top of this, as we implement decisions on the top of the organization, it does take a little while to get out to everybody, just because we are so vast. And members from outstate Minnesota, you know exactly what I'm talking about, is we kind of are all over in many different regions and counties. We have multiple offices located in different places. So you can see we have operations support on the administration side, and then on the operations side, regional operations, and then the divisions, lands and minerals, parks and trails, enforcement, ecological resources, fish and wildlife, waters, and forestry. One of the things that we've been working on for a while now is performance measurement and indicators. We've been tracking 91 indicators and targets that are outlined in our strategic conservation agenda. I handed out copies of this report to the Finance Committee, and unfortunately I don't have any more right now. But the website, the web link is on this slide. You can see there. It is on the web. All versions are on the web. You can see, go back and look at those. We're working on our new edition, which will hopefully will be out by April of 2008. It's going to have a little bit of a different look to it, focusing on those three drivers that we have a little bit more and opportunities we have to deal with those. But the report talks about department-level priorities in specific and measurable terms. It measures our progress and the lack thereof sometimes on those indicators, and it documents the conservation results. And the tool that we use and what it really does for us, it helps clarify expectations with citizens and also the legislature and other stakeholders that we have. So we've been doing this for quite a while. This will be our fifth year. It does take a lot of work, but we do feel it does provide value, especially as we're talking now about what are the benefits of this or that or the impacts of this or that. It gives us a tool to go back and look and measure that outcome to those achievable goals that we have. And we're very open. There are some things we don't meet and some goals we don't meet, and we want to talk about what the barriers are of that as well, so, and why we aren't able to do that. Just quickly, our division directors, which you will have an opportunity to meet more up close and personal as we go through the presentation, as you come over for the tours, first of all, next week, but as different issues come up, they will be working with the committee directly. Lands and Minerals is Mark Vadas. Waters is Kent Lacasmo. Forestry, David Epperly. Parks and Trails is Cortland Nelson. Fish and Wildlife, David Shad. Ecological Resources, Steve Hirsch. And Enforcement, Captain Ken Sorin is the Acting Enforcement Colonel from Grand Rapids, Region 2. And Operations Support is our Chief Financial Officer, Denise Anderson. Now I'm going to move into the second part of the presentation and just go through each division and talk about core functions, highlight a few strategic programs that we're working on within those divisions, and I just give you some indicators or trends that we're tracking as well. The Division of Fish and Wildlife has several core functions, as you can see from this slide. Conserve and restore fish and wildlife populations and habitats, which seems pretty straightforward. Support fish and wildlife recreation. Conduct fish and wildlife inventory research and monitoring. Propagate fish for stocking. Primarily these are the walleye, salmonoids, lake trout, things like that that we do stock. We do stock other fish, catfish and things like that. And provide technical assistance and education. On the bottom you can see that we serve over 2.1 million anglers, 578,000 hunters and trappers, and 2.2 million wildlife viewers. And those are approximate numbers, are probably up a little bit. The wildlife viewer side has been growing tremendously, so we see more growth in that area. And also we serve on the commercial side of things 1,700 commercial fisheries operators and over 2,000 resorts and related tourist businesses, making sure that we're working in the conjunction to help meet their needs as well, and that they understand clearly what our objectives and goals are and what we are doing. Probably the biggest critical trend that we're working on in this issue, and I wouldn't call it a highlight, but that's kind of the way we have it classified here, is habitat loss and fragmentation, and this relates directly to that landscape change. The both landscape changes we're seeing, both historic and ongoing, are resulting in the loss and fragmentation of habitat, and even though it probably slowed down a little bit, it still is dramatic, the amount of land that we're losing to development on a yearly basis. You can see these are just some of the examples that are out there right now. Going back to that slide a little bit, what we're trying to do is work with developers and property owners and landowners to make sure the development that they do is done in a sustainable manner. There are a lot of examples out there of cluster development or developments that are done in a sustainable manner, and it's working with them, especially in what we consider the, you know, it's a 7-county, 11-county, 17-county metropolitan area, however you want to look at it, making sure that as development does occur, there's thinking how to do it to reduce impervious surface, reduce those footprints a little bit, making sure that their impacts are lessened and provide open space and habitat benefits wherever possible. One of the priority highlights that we have really dealing with fish and wildlife is we call it the Working Lands Initiative or Working Lands. And really the premise of this project or goal, program, however you want to look at it, is that the state cannot own, the DNR cannot own all the land in the state of Minnesota, as anybody knows, and Representative Junkie knows firsthand, being the committee, the chair of the Ag Committee. Our first conservationists were farmers, and they still do provide a huge conservation benefit to the land by managing their land for erosion control. They do provide a lot of habitat. There are a lot of programs that are out there. We need to work with landowners, and you can see in the shaded area there, this is the prairie pothole region of the state, where a lot of the wetlands are remaining, these wetland prairie land complexes. We need to make sure that we're unifying, coordinating, and improving conservation investments in this region. The partners we're working with are Ducks Unlimited, and if you're new to this committee, you'll see a lot of these acronyms, and maybe we can get you a little cheat sheet for it. But DU, Ducks Unlimited, Pheasants Forever, Nature Conservancy, Minnesota Waterfowl Association, Natural Resource Conservation Service, Board of Water Soil Resources, United States Fish and Wildlife Services. We're working with all of these entities to create large complexes of wetlands and grasslands to improve fish and wildlife habitat and enhance water quality. And it's not all by purchasing land by any means. It's working with these groups and local soil and water conservation districts to make sure that landowners know the vast array of programs that are eligible for them to enroll their lands in. Conservation Reserve Enhancement Programs, Grassland Prairie Programs, Fish and Wildlife Service Easements, Reinvested Minnesota Easements, Acquisitions through the state for Wildlife Management Areas, Waterfowl Production Areas. There's a ton of projects that are out there, many of which are eligible to keep that land in a working kind of production model, but it also protects and buffers those areas as well. What we've seen in our duck plan, which is a strategic plan for the duck habitat in the state of Minnesota 25 years, is that 4 to 9 square mile complexes provide the best habitat, breeding habitat, resting habitat, and they have huge water quality benefits out there in the prairie pothole region of the state. So we're focusing with many different types of programs to create these large complexes. And in this one, you can see there's a WMA on my right-hand side. It's the gold area there. That does provide public access to hunting, but there's a huge block of habitat where, in this case, ducks or pheasants are able to live and produce it, and I think of it as be happy, prosper in those areas. And then it provides a lot of other benefits as well. Some of the targets that we've had is to the long-term goal is to protect an additional 2 million acres of prairie and wetland complexes. And then the annual target is to increase the number of high-quality wetland complexes through restoration and protection of 40,000 wetland and grassland acres by all partners each year. We're working towards this goal. I don't have the exact number with me to date on what the 08 figure was, but we'll be getting those numbers to you and talking about this program in more detail in the future here. Strategic priority highlight of the Fish and Wildlife Program or Fish and Wildlife Division is the Minnesota's current WMA management system. We have almost 1,500 wildlife management areas within the state of Minnesota, and they provide a little bit over 1.25 million acres of public land for hunting, hiking, and birding. And all of these have access. They're all accessible by everyone within the state of Minnesota. We're trying to manage them and come back and restore them and do high-quality restoration projects wherever we can and manage these as open hunting areas. People come from other parts of the country and they're just in awe of the system we have. And I tell them now, if you think the system's great now, wait for 25 years and see what it'll be like then, because it'll just be mind-boggling what we have for conservation on the ground by then. The goal of the wildlife management area, we had the Citizens Advisory Committee that convened in 2005, and they set a goal of 702,000 acres of additional wildlife management areas, lands to be purchased within the next 50 years. And you can see the members and the stakeholders of that group. A lot of the groups are all these groups that you see and hear from every day at the Capitol. So if there's no questions, Mr. Chair, I'll move right into the Division of Forestry. vision of forestry's core functions are to protect people, property, natural resources from wildlife harm. That's the primary goal, one of the primary goals. And I should just step back and say the main goal of the Department of Natural Resources is that protection of people, property, and natural resources, not only from wildlife or wildfire harm, I should say, but from flooding and other natural disasters as well. But when fire season comes about, or when we have a fire like we had at Ham Lake or Cavity Lake, or some of our other states need assistance, we are one of the experts in firefighting, and it changes our whole aspect of the division. Our main goal, we deploy a lot of forces. We do have the MIFSE Center up in Grand Rapids. It's the Minnesota Interagency Fire Cache, and we're one of several of these caches within the United States, and we deploy resources throughout the Midwest and throughout the nation on firefighting. The resources that it takes and the severity of those fires vary year from year, and the main goal when those fires do break out or during fire season is to make sure that we're on watch and doing what we need to do to protect the citizens and property of the state. In addition, we manage 4.2 million acres of state forest lands for multiple values. Help landowners and communities restore and improve forests, produce tree seedlings and conservation planting, and then implement the policies of the Sustainable Forest Resource Act. You can see this on the sidebar there, Minnesota Forest Support, Forest Products Industry, Wildlife Habitat, Clean Water, and Recreation. Again, just talking about the firefighting. The demands will shift our remaining staff from other priority work. Field technicians, not only from forestry, but wildlife, fish and wildlife, and enforcement, trails and waterways, wherever we need to deploy them, if we have to, we will do that to do the work that needs to be done. One of the things that we are facing, though, is losing a lot of our staff, losing the expertise that we have, up to 20% of wildfire expertise within the next couple of years. And actually, that's within the whole division of forestry. The recruitment is just people, as you, I'm sure you're aware, people aren't going into natural resource-based sciences like they used to be, and forestry is a particular issue that we do have some major concerns with in that recruitment retention. But that wildfire expertise is something we need to continue building on and making sure we have the red card people, if you call it that. It's your certified card you need to have in order to fight fire, making sure that we have those people. And I know Representative Saylor knows exactly what I'm talking about because I believe your son is a firefighter, if I'm not mistaken. So we do appreciate that. Just so you can see, the Cavity Lake fire, it was 8 days in 2006. Burned almost 32,000 acres, and the cost was $11.3 million. Now, that was a federal fire, so those costs came from the federal government or reimbursed by the federal government, but it was a huge fire for us to fight. And then since then, the Ham Lake fire was even worse than that. One of the major efforts that we've undertaken in the past couple of years and have successfully maintained is our forest certification project. We received a dual forest certification on most of the state forest lands, 4.8 million acres of state administered forestry lands, and this was done in December 2005. These are two organizations, Sustainable Forestry Initiative and FSC, that they go through and certify that they look at all of our practices on the land, what we're doing from roads, harvesting, protecting certain areas of the forest, making sure we have, for example, old growth areas set aside. We're protecting representative species in the forests. And they also have looked at our off-road management, our off-road vehicle use, our ATV process that we've gone through, designation process. And they determined that we're working in a sustainable manner, that we are meeting the goals, our rules, our policies, our procedures are meeting the standards that need to be out there so we have a sustainable forestry ecotype, basically. This does have a cost, though, and we do take that out of our revenues, but it's something that in the past, timber purchasers, Time Warner kind of led this off as a major consumer of paper. They said, we are not going to buy any paper unless it comes from a certified forest, be it SFI or FSC. And the reason we do dual certification is because some people only value one certification, other people value the other certification, so we decided early on that we will seek this dual certification. It made it a little bit more intensive but we feel the value, at least right now, is there. As all lands become certified, it remains to be seen what that certification value will be, but at this point in time, we are moving forward, maintaining our certification, and do recognize its value. And you can see here that we are the holder, the state of Minnesota is the largest dual certificate holder of forest lands within the United States. Critical trend, the role of private non-industrial forest land, and this has changed a little bit, but historically we've seen a lot more wood being put up for sale off of private lands than state, county, and federal lands. But now that's changed a little bit, and I apologize for not having this slide updated, but because as the value of timber has gone down, landowners are not recognizing the rewards that they get for actively managing their forests. You know, a productive forest needs to be maintained in a working order, have many different year classes in it. But if you're a landowner for conservation values in particular, you might not want to take those trees off because you're only going to get, right now, probably a third of what they were worth 2 years ago. But to do that, if you do manage it actively, you have a lot of habitat benefits and doing it done the right way, water quality and conservation values as well. What this means is that the pressure upon the state and federal lands is more so for putting wood up on those lands to meet the demands that are still out there. Even though the timber industry has gone down a little bit, 2x4s, plywood, whatever you want to talk about, the demand for paper and the demand for biofuels, particularly biomass, is out there, and that's one of the issues we're trying to deal with. How do we maintain a forest and do forest land sales, timber sales, that represent the values of biomass, round logs, and paper pulp? They all bring in different price points and things like that, so it's something that you'll be hearing more about in the future, especially as we move forward with timber sales and things like that. This slide just talks about our ability or our targets dealing with forest stewardship plans. These have gone down. We have not made our proposed target because of the downturn in the timber market, and this is something we'll be talking about more in the finance division, but the Division of Forestry is funded about 50% from the Forest Management Investment Account, where the receipts from the timber receipts off of the state lands go into that account. Because of the forecasting, we've had to unallot about $4 million out of the FMIA this year, and we'll have to unallot an additional portion of that out of that fund for next year. And plus, the general fund pressures on the other side of the funding equation have brought to light some serious funding issues within the Division of Forestry that you'll be hearing about and seeing about in the coming weeks and months. But this just shows we have kind of maintained, and we wanted to increase that forest stewardship planning, and we're doing the best we can to work with landowners to make sure they're managing their lands in a sustainable fashion. A bigger trend we highlighted, and actually I do have an update on this one that we can hand out. You can hand this out for me. Deals with forest parcelization. Land parcelization, breaking up of the Northwoods and all forestry parts of the state. When these tracts start to become subdivided, the value of habitats diminish. There's a significant decrease in the ability to manage those areas for timber, decreased access for recreation, and oftentimes there's a correlated impairment in water quality. As you see, the large paper companies, Potlatch, Blandin, Boise, in the past couple of years have divested their land ownings into TIMOs, or Timber Investment Management Organizations, or REITs, basically a real estate company that manages land for the financial asset. They usually take those lands and they divide them up, they lease them out on a yearly, quarterly, 5-year, 8-year lease or whatever, and they try to maximize the value of the land for its worth, not for the resource that's on there. The problem we have with that is we lose access. We lose the ability to get in those lands to hunt. If there's a snowmobile easement, we've had several of these that have been locked down on both sides because somebody has bought the land. But in the past, we've been very successful with the legislature's help in not only establishing this Minnesota Forest for the Future program, which is a forest legacy. It establishes it in the conservation easement statutes of Chapter 84, but it also allows us to be able to receive substantial funding to purchase large tracts of easements. You can see from this handout, the past four years, we've purchased over 50,000 additional acres of forest legacy easements that create these working forests. This map kind of shows some of those and where they've been or where they come through. And to date, the program has nearly 66,000 acres of forests throughout all parts of the state. I don't have the slide on here, I apologize. You can see where these areas are protected. We've been working through the Legislative Citizen Commission on Minnesota Resources and through the Legislative Capital Investment Program to obtain these dollars. But they do provide large tracts of unlittered or there's no hunting signs on these. There's no trespassing signs on these. They're open to the public. There's forest roads driving through them, hunting, camping, fishing, berry picking, what have you, are allowed on all of these lands. So it is a huge success and one that you'll be hearing more of in the future as well. Moving on to the Division of Ecological Resources, the DNR, the Ecological Resources Division, collects and manages all of our ecological data, county biological survey work. Our rare and threatened endangered species activities are focused here. They deal with aquatic plant management, invasive species, things of those nature. And also, this is where our environmental review work is housed within the Division of Ecological Resources, primarily because they have no enforcement authority in that division. The Division of Waters has enforcement authority. Other divisions have enforcement authority. We need to keep environmental review in a division that has none. They also deliver the technical assistance to manage environmental review, as I talked about, protect and restore native plant and wildlife communities, and they regulate activities that impact native plant and wildlife communities through other stakeholders as well. And you can see I talked about that bird watching a little bit ago, but nearly 2 million Minnesotans actively watch, feed, or photograph wildlife, 54% participation rate, number 2 in the nation. I think that's gone up to about 56% maybe now, but I don't think we're number 1 yet. Otherwise, I'd have it on there for sure. One of the highlights in this division is the Clean Water Legacy activities that we're coordinating with the PCA, Department of Agriculture, Bowser, and local governmental units to assist in the development of impaired waters, develop TMDL plans, implement those plans, and then protect all waters of the state. This is a huge issue, and now for the first time, I think we're hoping that we'll adequately be able to address the needs that are out there. The Lake Pepin TMDL covers about 3/4 of the state of Minnesota. And until we start to address that restoration plan, or once we do start to address that restoration plan, every person in the state of Minnesota will know what TMDL means, because it's going to have a lot of impacts to all of us, but we do need to do that because we need to deal with clean water, and it's a huge priority throughout the state of Minnesota. The rubber really meets the road when we get those restoration plans in progress that are in place, talking about impaired surfaces, non-point source runoffs, contaminants, pollutants, and the changes in behavior that every person, every industry, every landowner will need to do to meet that. And we're going to play a big role in that, in educating those people, providing them that technical assistance, via the web, via meetings, via however we have to do it. Podcasts, I don't know, we don't have a space page, MySpace page yet, but somebody's trying to say that DNR will be on Facebook, and then they also said that we probably won't have any friends or whatever that means, I don't know, but I'm used to that as it is. So, critical trend highlight, just harmful invasive species, native plant animal species are displaced by invasive species, habitat for fish and wildlife are degraded, water-based recreational activities are limited, and then there are industrial water uses that are impacted by such things as zebra mussel. Spiny water flea, you can see down there, is next to the mussel. There's a lamprey, and then invasive plants. It's probably milfoil up there on that top picture. This is an issue that we will be talking a lot about, not only in policy, but in budget committees. It's something we need to really keep focused on, and keep our vigilance, not only on the aquatics, but on the terrestrial species as well. This slide just shows our target. It's not really a good measure, I don't think, but we're targeting that no more than 10 new lakes a year become infested with invasive species. It's decreased a little bit. We're able to meet that goal, but it's not a good goal to have. It should be that there are no new invasive species water bodies and that we're decreasing them. But the reality is once these take hold, it's really hard, if not impossible, to eliminate them. And this, the picture on the right there just shows a person removing the plants and our invasive species inspector at a boat launch, making sure that people are taking their boats in and out of the waters are aware of the impacts in the law requiring the removal of all aquatic vegetation from any boat that comes out of, goes into any water body. Moving on to the Division of Waters, you can see we have almost 12,000 lakes within the state, nearly 10 million acres of wetlands, 90,000 miles of rivers, and we have 750 wells that we maintain for groundwater level monitoring at this point in time. The goal, the core functions of the Division of Waters are maintaining the physical integrity of Minnesota, collecting water data, coordinating technical analysis, regulating activities through permitting, water consumption, water use, things like that, and providing support to local units of government on water management issues and protecting public safety, our flood damage mitigation program, flood damage reduction, dam safety programs lie in the Division of Waters. And on that note, the critical trend is just flood damage, which at the rate the snow is falling this winter could be another issue for us in these areas in the state. Flood extremes can harm people and property. Major floods have occurred in 97, 2001, 2002, and 2004. And this just shows the city of Oswego, Minnesota, during the Red River flood of 97, which was, in recent times, probably the worst we've seen. The event spurred efforts for greater coordination of flood protection throughout the Red River Valley. With Mr. Chairman's home district. And there has been a lot of work done in the Red River Valley through the Red River Mediation Board, through the support, continued support, I should say, of the legislation through the capital investments we've made, putting up not only flood control structures, but removing properties from the floodplain wherever possible. That's kind of our main goal, is to get these houses and the structures out of the 100-year floodplain, which probably is like a 20-year floodplain right now, but moving those structures out, which are houses we provide, we have to work with the landowners to get them comparable value, get them out of different places. But removing those structures and creating other structures in those areas that can control the water that is there.
And Representative Hansen has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Commissioner Meyer, we had talked about getting a list of flood retention structures or dams infrastructure that the DNR had. I think you'd mentioned it, or Mr. Lockesmo had mentioned that there was a list. Any progress on that, preparing that? Or?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, I had assumed that you already received that. I will see if I can get that for you tomorrow. I apologize.
Okay.
We do have a backlog. I mean, the funding, as you could maybe well imagine, if you look at a picture of this size and think about the vastness of northwest Minnesota and the flatness of that area, the funding needs are pretty astronomical. We've been able to pick off the high-priority areas, but, of course, we can't do everything that everybody wants all at the same time. So I'll make sure you get that information as soon as possible.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Meyer. Continue.
Moving on. One of our priority highlights are water resources information, and this is one we've made a little bit of ground on through support through the Environmental Trust Fund dollars, or the LCCMR. Information on geology and groundwater for counties and regions. This slide shows where we have county geological atlases completed, in progress, and then also where regional hydrogeological assessments are completed or in progress. We use this information to find reliable water resources and manage water and land sustainably. You can see we have the areas that cover about 76% of the state's population and 39% of the state's area done, but this is an important resource and one that we're appreciative of the support we've received from the legislature and hope for continued support. Water use, where it is, what it is, how much there is, those are all questions that are near and dear to everybody's heart, no matter where you come from or your aspect on development, not development. Everybody needs clean water, and they need water to survive. and we need water for sustainable economic growth and development as well. And water, unfortunately, will be the oil of the next 50 years probably. And it's going to be important to us as a state how we develop our strategic water plans and how we develop those resources and work with our neighboring states and the whole country on water use and allocation. The Great Lakes Compact is a good example of something this legislative body and the executive branch have been able to get passed and implemented, which will protect that diversion of water from the Great Lakes to other parts of the country outside of that water basin. So something just to keep in the back of your mind. Moving on to the Division of Enforcement. The core function of the Enforcement Division is to protect natural resources through public safety and through education and law enforcement. These are the implementers and enforcers of the game and fish laws that we do pass here. They do resource protection. Wetland Conservation Act enforcement is done by the DNR enforcement officers. We go out and we do go to those sites. We go on the violator's property or wherever the damage may be occurring, and we issue the cease and desist order. We get a lot of flack for that sometimes, but that's our job. But we are doing those activities, working with Bowser and the local units of government to issue those citations, making sure that the restoration orders are done and things of that nature.
Okay. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Meyer, will we be getting a report or a progress update on the flyovers and the use of the money?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, yes, I can get that to you in person, forward it to the committee, however. I'll work with you directly to see how you want that. Good. Go through the chair. The program Representative Hansen is referring to, this is my next slide, so let me just do this real quick and we'll go to that slide. The other aspects of enforcement deal with resource protection, as I mentioned, recreation enforcement, snowmobile, boating, boat and water safety, OHV safety. They also are coordinating of our firearm safety programs and all of our safety training and education programs, and public safety and service. When a situation does occur, such as the I-35 bridge collapse, some of our officers in the metropolitan area were first on the scenes because we do have the resources available for boats. The flooding in Representative Bukowski's area several years ago. Several of our officers saved several lives that night when the rain would not stop because of the resources that we had available and their expertise in managing those resources, particularly airboats in that case. But we are ready, willing, and able to be on the spot when needed when an emergency does come up. You can just see some of the highlights. We have, actually this number is probably up a little bit, 271,000 registered snowmobiles, 309,000 registered recreational vehicles, and over 40,000 students per year attend our firearm safety classes. Just 2 years ago, we trained our 1 millionth student in firearm safety, which is quite an accomplishment for us. Moving on to the wetlands protection, Operation Eye in the Sky, I think we've termed it in some cases. Wetland protection is a priority of ours, and in 2005, 2006, and actually even the past 2 years, we were able to identify and locate wetland destruction throughout the state of Minnesota through this program. It's as we're up doing aerial surveillance, either on fire cruising or something, some related aerial activity, or in many cases, we will just conduct aerial surveillance for wetland violation infractions depending on the time of year. We do catch people. You can see this slide here shows the area on top where there's a skid steer in there doing actual excavation of this water body, which is a public water body. And this is an old outcome, but one that we'll have an updated outcome for as we talk about enforcement in the budget division, or finance committee, I should say. 516 possible impacts were identified, brought a lot of strong media coverage and growing public awareness and acceptance of this program. One of the concerns that we have, though, is making sure that as we identify these infractions, that they are investigated, and we do investigate them on the ground, but that the counties and the local government then have the resources to follow up through the legal process as well and make sure that they are not receiving a just unfunded mandate through some of our activities as well. So,
okay. Representative Junkie.
why are you flying this rather than using satellite photos like we use in the rest of the world in agriculture and other things? Every year we set up new borders and outlines for fields and wetlands and everything else over at the FSA offices. Why wouldn't you do the same thing, utilizing that technology rather than hiring pilots and planes and trying to see things from the air or photograph them from there? Why wouldn't you utilize satellite technology?
Mr. Chair, Representative Junkie, we have pilots and planes within the Division of Enforcement within the Department of Natural Resources. So it's not hiring, it's utilizing those when they are doing something else in conjunction as we can piggyback on another activity when they're in the air. But as you can see here, we need to catch these violations as they're going on, if at all possible, to get them stopped and get them restored. Before, if you were to go through and do an aerial survey of an area, the workload to do that type of activity would be a lot more expensive than the work, the cost of doing this. We'd cover a lot more ground faster through the air than trying to look at rectifying satellite imagery or orthophotography or whatever you want to look at. It may be a tool to use in the future if those tools are available at the resolution we need to be able to identify a skid steer or a backhoe or somebody doing some work in a public water body. But often what we would see is you would see a picture of a wetland one year, and then you would see a picture of no wetland the next year. To be able to come back and restore that may not be possible at that point in time.
Mr. Chair, how many of those 516 were caught in the act? Mr. Meyer?
Mr. Chair, Representative Junk, I don't have that information with me right now, but as we pull together our summary of the program, I'll make sure to include what we identified, what we went on the ground and saw, and what actually ultimately ended up with a violation. Or were those, I'll include that in the summary of the program for Representative Trump.
Go ahead.
Any other questions on this activity? Moving forward to the Division of Lands and Minerals.
Excuse me, Mr. Meyer, Representative Saylor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Mayor. I just wanted to go back to the DNR enforcement slider. I just wondered if you could get for me information on the rate of the registered recreational vehicles. I see you have the total number here, and I just wondered how that's been compared to previous years, what the rate is.
Mr. Meyer?
Mr. Chair, Representative Taylor, okay. Now you want all motorized? I mean, I'm assuming we're going to see more snowmobiles registered this year because as people's when they can use them, they'll register. But I can certainly get that for you. Briefly, the growth has not subsided. We're still seeing growth throughout all classes. The boating registration numbers, I'm assuming, will be down this year, registered number of boats, but some of those other ones have maintained.
Chair,
yeah.
Sure, it was just the RVs, the ATVs, the OHVs, okay. Not the boats, not the snowmobiles.
Not the problem. Thank you. Moving on to lands and minerals. The core function of our lands and minerals division is to manage real estate transactions on the 5.5 million acres of state-owned lands, manage mineral activities on about 12 million acres of state-owned mineral rights. In many cases, we own the mineral rights, but we don't own the surface rights, so we do manage those mineral rights actively. And also enforce mine land reclamation regulations at taconite and peat mining operations that are about 250,000 acres of public and private land at this point in time. Minnesota does have a huge, we are the national leader in taconite production, and we're third in horticultural peat mining. So we do have a large role in this resource. You can see this slide has gone down a little bit. It ends in October 2006, but the global metal demand, this is at the peak, probably, of the Industrial Revolution overseas. But China, India, and other countries expanding manufacturing capabilities. The prices of raw materials have skyrocketed. This looks at copper and zinc prices primarily. You can see copper is blue, zinc is pink, and the nickel is the gold. And then just talking about mineral lease income, and actually the projected here on the 08 and 09, are actually higher. The 08 and 09 will be higher than the projections were because we've successfully renegotiated our mineral leases with several of the large leaseholders as to what those royalty rates are. But one of our main goals, is to maximize mineral lease revenues to the Permanent School Fund, Permanent University Trust Fund, and other local units of government having tax forfeited minerals. Primarily, this comes from taconite mining and the royalty rates that are paid on a per-ton basis. And our Lands and Minerals Director, Marty Vegas, took on and successfully renegotiated several of the major contracts and is in the process of renegotiating the rest of them. I don't know what that royalty rate is, and it has increased substantially. But again, now with the economic downturn, that will go down a little bit. But when the market rates do come back up, we're going to be at a higher rate once again on a per ton amount that is deposited in the general fund, permanent school trust fund, permanent university trust fund, and also those local units of government. Moving on to parks and trails, this as I mentioned, does represent the combined division now of parks and trails. The core functions: preserve, restore, and interpret state's natural and cultural resources, provide nature-based recreational opportunities for current and future operations. You can just see some of the things that we operate, manage, and maintain: 74 state parks and rec areas, 8 waysides, 54 state forest campgrounds, almost 1,600 public water access sites, and almost 3,600 miles of trails that include 1,250 miles on 21 state trails, 1,200 miles on state park trails, and over 1,000 miles on state forest trails. Now, a lot of those are snowmobile trails, other types of motorized trails, but there are substantial miles of non-motorized trails there as well. Just a little bit on the side, there are 8 million annual state park visitors. We continue to rank first in a number of boats per capita, about one boat for every 6 per people. And we're 10 of the Minnesota's top 35 tourist attractions are within Minnesota State Park.
And Mr. Meyer, as far as trails are concerned, I know that you've been in the process of completing mapping for ATV trails, and a number of forests have had the mapping completed. How long until the full process will be completed? That's going to be this year?
Mr. Chair, members, we were set out, mandated by legislation, to go through our forest inventory and identify trails, closed trails, open trails, create new trails in some cases, on a forest-by-forest basis, and that was to be done by December 31st, 2008. And we did meet that goal, Mr. Chair. We're in the process of going back now and on a forest-by-forest basis, kind of tweaking those plans a little bit, but we need to make sure, now that we have everything identified, sign, post, close, develop that trail system on a forest-by-forest basis that we've identified, oftentimes with the local units of government and stakeholders' involvement. The mapping is a little bit different. We haven't completed maps on those trails yet. We have many, enough maps to fill this room probably a couple times over on different routes and segments. What we did is we went back and looked at anything that looked like a trail. If it was a deer trail, heavy used foot trail, we put that down on our inventory. So then that was part of the issue of, we had examine X number of the trails, and we're creating this number of trails. What we call the trail was any kind of corridor that was open for use. We'll be coming back now after they're signed and getting maps out, like you have a snowmobile map, so the riders have those in their pockets and they know where they're at. Again, on a forest-by-forest basis, once those trails are up and running and the forests are up there. I mean, some of them, like the Nemadji, I believe, is already mapped. That was one of the plans we had earlier on in the process. But it's going to take us some time to get all of the individual maps up. Our main goal would be to get it up on the web in a downloadable format so that you could download it onto a GPS unit and have that GPS unit right on your, whatever you're riding, snowmobile, ATV, motorcycle, bike, and you can see where that trail is. The technology is there now. If you haven't seen these handheld GPS units, they have trail corridors on there, and there's a Minnesota company, Lake Masters, who they do maps that have the depth contours on their GPSs, so you can take this GPS and in the wintertime walk out to the middle of the lake and it'll say you're in 28 feet of water and drill a hole to go ice fishing, you'll be pretty much on 27, 28, 29 feet of water, depending on where the water level fluctuates. We want to have those recreational corridors embedded in that technology as well. A lot of them already are. Our WMAs, for example, are in those things. So the users will not only have a paper map, but there'll be some digital corridor that they can have on their GPS as well to see where they're going. So the technology is there. We're trying to do the best we can in getting those maps up and running. They'll be on our website electronically, however we need to do it. So moving forward to the next slide, this just kind of shows the changing recreation use, the trend that I spoke of long in the beginning of my presentation. It's starting to seem like a long time ago now, but in the beginning here, we have been going down, and this is ours by age class in Minnesota, and you can see the per capita index of 100 average there, and we need to make sure that this is improving. Our user satisfaction on parks, you can see, this is restoration, I should say, I thought I had one on user satisfaction. We did a survey last year on parks user satisfaction, and it did rate really high. I think 86% of the users were very satisfied with their experiences. But we need to make sure that we're creating camping opportunities. People know where the trails are. For people who can't get to the park system, I've talked to some of you folks about how casinos are out there picking up people in buses. Maybe at some point in time we can pick up people in buses and bring them to the parks and let them camp. And we're already working with REI and other outdoor outfitters to get tents and sleeping bags and get people camping who don't have the resources to go camping. We take the sleeping bags, get them cleaned after people use them. But there are opportunities for a person who's never gone camping before to go to a skate park and learn how to set up a tent, learn how to start a fire, learn how to actually sleep outside overnight. I mean, for some people, that's a huge thing that they've never done. There are huge barriers to them doing that, but we need to figure out how we can get those people out to those parks and have them do that. So
okay.
This slide here just talks about...
Excuse me, Representative Saylor had a question on this point.
Actually, it wasn't on this point, Mr. Chair, but going back one, I could wait until the end if you would prefer.
Fine, go ahead.
Back to the mining piece, just a little bit. I'm sorry, I should have asked you that earlier. But I just wondered, have you had any conversations with the PCA regarding minerals, reclamation, and landfills? I know we're looking at reclamation, as you talked about here, or not reclamation, but claimation of minerals from lands. I recognize that landfills is really probably outside of your area. But I wondered if you'd had any conversations with them regarding the opportunity for mining those landfills.
Mr. Meyer?
Copper, aluminum, all of those, you know, the minerals that we've just been throwing away for years. They're waiting
Chair,
for us.
No, we haven't, but, okay. You know, it's something I suppose we should be looking at, and I would hope that they're looking at as they do remove and restore liners or things like that, as these landfills are mined or removed. And things like that, that reclamation is a possibility. I know sometimes it doesn't always line up that way, but it's something I can certainly look into.
Thank you.
It does present some unique opportunities, hopefully. Mm-hmm. If we won't do that, future generations certainly will, I'll tell you that.
Mm-hmm. Well, Representative Sikowski.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Mr. Meyer, talk a little bit more about the tents. We're buying tents for people to camp, is that what you said?
Mr. Meyer?
Mr. Chair, Representative Koski, we are not buying them. We're working with recreation, with people who sell outdoor products, and they're providing them to us to participating in programs with us. So for that example, REI had donated some tents and camping equipment for us to utilize in the parks to provide these opportunities. We also have a geocaching program where we work with Best Buy. They donated $35,000, I think it was, and we bought GPS units. So a person can take one of these handheld, basically it's a compass, a handheld compass that will tell you where to go. You can put in a point and use those so people have the technology to utilize within the parks. We're working with all sorts of different stakeholders to get people outside, trying to figure out what the barriers are. And in camping, a lot of it is the tents, the sleeping bags. We aren't buying them directly, but other people are providing them for us to use and are sponsoring and working with us on these types of programs.
Thank you.
And yes, Representative Sterner.
Thank you, Chair. I just had a question, like, what is the number of park rangers that the state employs, and what do you estimate our tourism dollars that we get from the parks?
Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chair, Representative, park rangers, we have park managers in every park for the most part. Some of our satellite parks have reduced those actual on-site managers because they are real close to another park, for example. The tourism dollars, I don't have those with me, but we do have detailed information and research that shows the actual financial impact or benefit of having a state park located to a community. I don't know, Representative Saylor might know some of the benefits of having a PASTA in her, near her district, I should say, but it does provide substantial benefits.
Okay. Thank you. And Ms. Margo, please continue.
If there's no more questions, Mr. Chair, I'll go back to the park highlights.
Representative Lewin has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was wondering, could you give us a little more perspective, like historical perspective, Commissioner, on the decrease? I think I'm capturing what you were saying in your slides, your presentation. There's decreased use of our recreational facilities, and why you think that is, or if there's any studies on why that trend is continuing.
Mr. Martin.
Mr. Chair, Representative, the trend that we see, and actually it'll probably be reversed, I would assume, in retaliated numbers from last year and looking into the next year, people using parks, people going out hunting and fishing. What we started off is looking at park entrance, annual park permit sales, for example, fishing licenses, hunting licenses. Those have been in the decline for several years now. And we're trying to examine why, and recruitment and retention, particularly in those activities, is really important to continue our heritage. On the park side of it, as people cannot afford to go outstate, as people cannot afford to go to more expensive places, I think last summer and particularly in the coming summer, you'll see people spending more time at parks, visiting parks, staying closer to home, going, for example, to William O'Brien State Park, which is about 30 miles from here, rather than maybe going someplace else. So, but the trend that we've seen is a decreasing use in some aspects of our outdoor recreational opportunities. And we want to make sure that we change that. In particular, you can see in the growing youth, just the influx of video games, and people just aren't going outside. And there's a lot of research at the federal level that shows that. There's been some books, No Child Left Behind, it talks about children going outside, not getting outside, and things like that. But there's some federal legislation getting people outside. And we did a report, we were mandated by the legislature to do a report on outdoor education, getting people outside, that hopefully at some point in time we may be able to review over here. But there is a growing concern among a lot of people that our younger generations just aren't getting outside like they should be.
Representative Bloom.
Mr. Chair, thanks. If I could do a follow-up. Do you collect any information or have any information on which of our public schools take children on field trips to some of our nature areas? I know in Eden Prairie Public Schools, where I'm from, there's a traditional trip to the Long Lake Nature and Conservation Area for the fifth graders every year, and I'm just wondering if that's something that's common amongst our public schools.
And maybe you could talk about what the DNR does in schools, if anything, as far as trying to encourage greater use of the outdoors. And Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chair, members, I couldn't provide you with a detailed list. We might have some ideas of what certain schools are doing. Champlin, for example, the school system has a great outdoor education program. Other schools, as you mentioned, are getting kids at a certain grade level outside, but I couldn't give you a comprehensive list at all. I don't know. I can certainly check with the Department of Education folks, see if they have any of that information. We have a number of programs, Project WET, Project WILD, talking about. We have MinAqua, it's called, where we go out and teach. We've created a curriculum that teachers can use and actually pick up to teach in their classrooms, and how fisheries, aquatic biology, how it fits in, then they can use it to meet some of the standards that are out there. We also have There's a school forest program. We have a number of, we have an outdoor education or education kind of unit that we have educational experts that provide outreach and education to K through 12 groups throughout the state. There's also on the environmental side of things, you know, the sharing environmental education and knowledge is the SEEK website that has a huge, vast array of information for people, educators to use and pull into their programs. So we're trying to provide resources and classroom-ready teaching aids wherever possible, and I can certainly provide you with a more detailed list of those opportunities that we have. It's also on our website, too. If you go directly to our website and look under education, I think education's right on the left-hand side there. There's on the left-hand side, and you can find a lot of those resources that are there.
And I think that's becoming more and more important as time goes on. We've seen this greater decline in young people especially being involved in outdoor activities. I think it's just an unfortunate consequence of some of the technological changes in our society and resulting in some of the cultural changes of less outdoor activities. But I think it's good that you're being more proactive. I think we have to continue to be more proactive in that way and encouraging outdoor use. Any other questions? Representative Hackbarth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, you talked a little bit about state park permits on the decline, hunting and fishing licenses on decline. Are there any areas of outdoor recreation that are on the increase?
Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hackbarth, I talked a little bit about the bird watching. Those numbers are out there. Increases, though, you certainly have seen numbers of different types of equipment being registered. Those numbers, the growth that in motorized recreation in some areas of the state has been an increase. We've also seen, you know, we're hoping to have increases within the hunting and fishing licenses in the coming years. Part of the numbers with the fishing licenses is we changed the license season a couple of years ago to make it, this may sound ridiculous, but a fishing license is good for 14 months now rather than 12 months. So they used to expire in February, and now we made them so you can buy a new one in March, but it doesn't expire till May. The trends and the growth are kind of all over the place a little bit, but we're trying to just revitalize the whole kind of get outside, enjoy nature, things like that. Certainly the demand, the opportunity is out there. We want to increase the demand for it as well. We'll be talking more about growth, shrinkages, and other things like that as we present different issues to you this session and talk about budget issues as well.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to state that what I wanted Commissioner Meyer to say was that, and I think he would agree with me, that outdoor motorized recreation is on the incline. There's more and more registered ATVs and snowmobiles and boats and those kinds of things all the time. Those kind of recreational opportunities are on the increase.
And Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Meyer, been brought to my attention that this in regard to the wetlands enforcement, that there's some bait dealers that are talking about they don't have enough bait because they're being enforced out of some of these wetlands where they're growing minnows. I just wondered if that's something that, what your take on that is, and I'm trying to ferret my way to the bottom of that.
Mr. Meyer.
Chair, Representative. Let me know when you get there. aquaculture impacts the wetlands has been something that we've been dealing with in the legislature for the past 4 years probably. And the certain types of minnows and turbidity and things like that. But as you're talking about the lack of bait, we haven't done anything enforcement-wise in the past couple of years any different. Now, the issue that a lot of people are talking about right now because ice fishing season is going on is the lack of golden shiners. It has always been against the law to import golden shiners into the state of Minnesota. We started enforcing and doing more enforcement work at the borders, as have our other states, Wisconsin, South Dakota, because of VHS and other invasive species issues over the past couple of years. And I need to say this rather delicately, but I guess the rate of breaking that law now has gone down because people recognize the threat, so people are not bringing in as many shiners as they have been in the past to the state of Minnesota, and it's impacting some of our bait industry. Some of the fishing areas, such as in your community around Lake Mille Lacs, we've recently had some communications that there's a lack of bait. Well, it's not because we've done anything differently. The supply and demand for bait, which are harvested out of mainly wetlands, with a permit, with a license, has gone down because people haven't been selling as many minnows in the winters, in the past winters. So they probably didn't harvest as many minnows to have on supply. There's a shortage maybe. But on the shiner side, people just aren't sneaking in as many shiners as they have been in the past, I guess, is the joke.
I just would offer there is a brouhaha brewing on that, and you may know more about it than I, but I'm going to keep looking, and I hope the DNR will too.
Mr. Chair, Representative, so I will make sure you're forwarded or you receive the response that we're preparing on that issue, and the committee does as well. It is an important issue, but with the VHS threat that's right around our corner, and if that gets into our water bodies and what that will do, we have to do whatever we can to stop the importation of bait, but also allow an aquaculture industry that can survive and provide us with the resources we need as well in a sustainable manner. And it goes back to the three circles and, you know, working with you folks to come up with some solutions, further solutions. We're working on best management practices for aquaculture. We talked about man-made ponds, things of that nature. We need to move more in that direction.
Okay. And I think we'll take one more question and then move on to sum it up. But Representative Lagunias.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I thought there were Minnesota folks were still exporting a lot of bait. Is that no longer true then?
Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lagunias, the bait export, there's still some bait exporting going on. The main... There's two aspects of, well, there's a lot of different aspects to aquaculture, but it depends on what, just like any production, what you're raising. Are you raising walleye? Are you raising walleye fingerlings? Are you raising trout? Are you raising fathead minnows? Fathead minnows aren't raised. They're captured. They're trapped and then collected, transported, sold. There's suckers. Suckers, decoy minnows for spearing, using for tip-up fishing or northern ice fishing, however you want to look at it. There is a substantial exportation going on of bait fish, but we do not allow the importation of bait fish.
I think maybe it would be good to have an update on the amount of poundage we export, because in my last reading it was huge. And maybe it's not huge anymore, but that was last year.
We certainly could provide that information.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Meyer.
Let's write that down. This slide here talks about acres of habitat with prescribed fire and active restoration within the state park system. Using fire, community restoration, other tools that are out there, doing restoration activities within state parks is very important. We did receive some bond support to do this last year, and we've got some of that work done. I know we've met with several of you, but if you're interested in those activities, it certainly can provide you a summary of what we've done just recently. But it is to maintain those areas and those habitats that those parks are established around in their native communities or in the ecotypes that they were established to protect. This talks about dealing with the trail side of the division, public water access. Target's been to acquire new access sites statewide, special emphasis on the Mississippi River and large lakes. And we're pretty much on target to meet those goals. One of the things we're going to come back and talk to you about this session is the establishment of boater waysides. Putting a wayside area, picnic area out on a lake. We're doing this, but through other tools, we want to make it a part of the Outdoor Recreation Act itself. So, like on Leech Lake, for example, have an island that would be a boater wayside, have a picnic area there, restroom facilities, picnic tables, fire ring. They exist. Lake of the Woods, Zippel Bay. We have a shore lunch area if you've ever been up that way, but we want to do more of that and actually get some authorization to make sure that we can do it in the right way, the right manner. DNR operations support, these are where our human resources, the department, leadership of the department, integrating department operations, formulating and establishing policies and procedures, delivering critical services to the public through regional operations, providing the financial assistance to local governments and private organizations. Our grant activities are focused out of our central operations area. And just a couple critical trends here. Integrated resource management, more extensive collaboration and more integrated solutions to complex natural resource problems, like the aquaculture problem, like climate change, like biofuels, things of those natures is really where we're focusing right now. Advances in science, technology, and information management are always needed to address the natural resource challenges that are out there. Talking about what Representative Junkie was just mentioning, using satellite imagery, perhaps, for wetland investigations and resources research. We need to look into that. I'm not saying that we shouldn't. We need to figure out how can we do things cheaper, faster, better on all aspects of department operations. Another one is the aging DNR workforce. More than 44% of the DNR employees are in 50 and above age bracket. And this last one is something that, you know, we really take to heart, and you're going to hear a lot about it from us. It's the accountability to results. The citizens have higher expectations for government performance and fiscal integrity, and I know you folks do as well. We're going to spend a lot of time in the coming weeks and months talking about what do we do, how much does it cost, what do you get for those dollars, what should we be doing differently. I need to hear from you what we shouldn't be doing. We need to have those discussions as a group here in the finance division, as a legislative body, as an executive branch, legislative branch, as citizens of the state, to really figure out how we're going to deal with the situation at hand. But ultimately, we need to provide conservation, we need to provide resource protection, we need to provide recreational opportunity, but we need to figure out how to do that. This talks about the drivers. We're summarizing the drivers: habitat loss, clean water, public access, invasive species, forest products industry. And I mean, a serious thing we need to talk about is what's happening out there in those rural parts of northern Minnesota. The loggers are, how are we going to keep them in business? How do we keep them around? We don't want to be in a situation a couple years from now like Colorado was in, where they don't have any loggers anymore. You have to have the state, you have to have somebody else managing the forest, cutting down the wood, getting it to market. OHV use management and regulation. This is something I hope we have time to talk about, but our forest certification processes that we just went through recognize us as a leader. The work we've undertaken over the past 4 years, the protections we put in place jointly, laws through the legislative process, rules that we have. Last year we closed down the recreational trail riding during the hunting season, during the rifle season, and people supported that. The hunters supported that, the user group supported that, and it was a success. We need to continue doing those types of things. Changing recreational participation, we talk a lot about that. Climate change, I know we're going to spend a lot of time on that. And biofuels, you know, that's just an emerging area we need to be. Not only biofuels, renewable energy. I know you talked about solar energy this morning. Looking at solar, geothermal, wind, how can we as a department be a leader so people can see those technologies work firsthand? This last slide, it really summarizes everything we've just been talking about, but it's one that I really like because it shows the connectiveness of everything that we do rather than the three circles. This actually shows how it works on the ground using a forest ecosystem as an example. If you have a forest, and if you don't manage that for timber, you don't manage those trees, you won't have habitat, you won't provide wildlife opportunities as much as you would have in other cases, but if managing those resources in a proactive manner will provide you with healthy waters, healthy habitats, and fishing opportunities on the other side of it. So it's really working within the context of those three circles on this overlay, and this forestry example is where we're going and where we need to maintain our activities. As we manage not only a piece of land for conservation or recreation values, how do we produce energy? How do we get biofuels off of it? Harvesting WMAs, for example, for biofuel development. We've done some of that pilot project in the Morris area, looking at, so we don't provide the cost to cut down or manage that prairie. So we don't have to burn it. We get paid for somebody to come in and harvest that prairie grass, and it went to the University of Morris to be used as biofuel to heat the school, provide them energy. How do we do more of that? And it's those types of challenging opportunities across all aspects of the DNR that we're looking forward to coming up with new and exciting opportunities with you guys.
Representative Gardner.
Thank you. I was wondering if you could give me an answer in 1 minute or less, because it's a simple question.
I'd love to.
And the list of DNR programs, lands and minerals, waters, forestry, parks and trails, fish and wildlife, ecological services, enforcement and operations support. How many of those are not going to get any money out of the new dedicated sales tax and therefore would likely see some sort of a cut because of the deficit?
Mr. Meyer?
Mr. Chair, Representative, will not get any new money, therefore we're not going to receive a cut?
I suppose that's hard to say right now. We don't know exactly what the...
strategic question. I mean...
Maybe we can ask Representative Rodriguez.
Well, I'm just assuming that... I've actually really liked the information he gave us last year also, but I'm just assuming some of these strategic issues are going to go away, or that's all.
And Representative Wargenius did want to respond.
Well, I think the big discussion we will be having is if they cut one of their programs and we try to backfill it with the new money, it will be called substituting, and we can't do that. So to the extent they choose to try to go that route, it actually puts us in a box. Do you understand what I'm saying? So if they choose to pull back money in an area, hoping for money out of this new money, the Constitution says you cannot substitute. This new money can't be used to substitute for traditional sources of funding. It's a pickle.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Meyer.
Members, in all seriousness, each division is funded by general fund differently. For example, the Division of Waters is 90% dependent on general fund dollars. The Division of Fish and Wildlife is just the opposite. They're less than 10% general fund. So parks and trails are heavily funded by the user groups, registrations, things like that, snowmobile stickers. But non-motorized trails has no funding source other than the general fund. Parks is a big general fund component. Forestry, as we talked about, is general fund and it's in forest management investment accounts. As we prepare our budget, we present our budget to you, you'll understand that in more detail. Actually, when we start next week, you'll understand those percentages and those dependencies or interdependencies on a general fund. Going back to the supplanting versus supplementing question, we will be very clear in where those reductions that we're recommending come from, so that you will be you will have a very open understanding of where, if we reduce something, where there would be a substitution versus a supplant issue. And, you know, we're looking for as much guidance and direction as you can give us on those issues, because while the legislation is very vague, I know the legislature needs to come up with some definitions and working definitions of what supplanting traditional sources of funding are. So those are, it's a great point that we need to try to work out together, and the sooner we can get some guidance on that, the better off I know we'll be. So we do appreciate it. I appreciate the question, Representative Gardner. It is a good question. One we need to take very seriously.
Are there any other questions? Representative Drazkowski.
Just quickly, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Meyer, do you have a list of those counties that have no net gain of state land policies?
Not
Mr. Meyer?
I can recite most of them, but not most of them. If you start over where Todd County is and kind of go up, I can give you a list. I have a map that has those highlighted on there. I think we could certainly provide that to the committee if that's what you're looking for.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? Okay. Seeing none, thank you, Mr. Meyer.
Thank you.
And we will, before we adjourn here, I would like people just to go around and introduce themselves quickly. And first of all, I'm Kent Eakin. This is my second term chairing this committee. I represent a district up in northwest Minnesota that includes all of Norman and Menominee counties, most of Becker, southern parts of Polk and Clearwater. I do have most of Itasca State Park is actually in my district. I share a little bit with Representative Saylor. So with that, if staff and members could introduce themselves going around the table, that would be great.
My name is Joe Hayes. I'm the community legislative assistant.
I'm Paul Gardner, vice chair from District 53A, six suburban communities in Anoka and Ramsey County.
Representative Andrew Falk from District 20A.
Bill Sterner from 37B, which is Rosemont half of Apple Valley. Herbs of Mail Junkie, Candy White County, where the lakes begin.
John Purcell, 4A, up in the Bemidji and the Leech Lake Indian Reservation area.
Rita Saylor, District 2B, part of Hubbard, Beltrami, Clearwater, Polk, and Pennington counties.
Jean Levine, South Central Minneapolis.
I'm in Shore, DFL Research.
Mark Nicely, Republican Caucus Research.
Tom Hackparth, I represent Northern Anoka County and part of Sherburne County.
Jennifer Loon, District 42B, Eden Prairie.
Danny McNamara, 57B, down in Hastings, and like Representative Purcell, Assistant Commissioner, I too am concerned about how we're managing minnows in wetlands, so it'll be a good discussion. And thank you for all the staff that accompanied you today. I'm glad to see you're so frugal.
They need to get home, but I've got working pretty hard on other presentations. So.
I'm Steve Druskowski. I'm from, I represent Northern Winona County, Southern Wabasha, and Goodhue Counties.
My name is Paul Anderson, 13A, Hope County, parts of Stearns and Candy, Ohio.
Tony Cornish, I have Blue Earth, Waseca, and Faribault Counties of bordering Iowa.
Janelle Taylor, House Research Analyst, staff in this committee.
Kirk Adolfo, Committee Administrator.
And a couple of pages that we have working with us this year, two new faces, if you could introduce yourselves as well.
I'm Molly Bittner. I'm from Canyon, Minnesota, school at the University of Minnesota Duke, and I study biology.
I'm Brian Wersinger, from White Bear Lake, and I just graduated from Hamlin with a degree in legal studies.
And I was also going to mention Bob Eloff, who is not here today as House Research, but he'll be here in future meetings. So anyone else that I've missed at all? Okay, just one last thing. We have the rules in your packet. Just one thing to mention. We do ask that you submit amendments and handouts 24 hours in advance just to help out in getting all of that information copied off and out to the members beforehand. Doesn't mean that you can't offer amendments after that, but if you do, we would ask that you do bring 50 copies to the meeting so that distribute it to all the members of the committee. And of course, we will take, you know, smaller oral amendments as well during the committee process. But that, and also the please turn off the volume of cell phones and beepers and so on. And sometimes we might even ask you to turn it off altogether if it's interfering with the intercom system, and that does happen from time to time. But with that, if there's no other questions or comments, we will adjourn until next Tuesday. Thank you.